State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Happy to see everybody here after last time I saw you is around something after 10 o'clock last night. Because we work hard down here, and here we are again. Please call the roll.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Representative Millet.
She's excused.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Here.
Representative Gaddis.
Here.
Representative Hughes. Representative Isaacson.
Here.
Chair Lynn.
Here. Okay. Thank you very much. Today on our schedule, we have Governor's Appointments with Police Standards Council. We have HB 113, the Alaska Fire Standards Council. And we have HCR 3, a Joint Committee on Federal Overreach. And so I would like to attend to the business of the Governor's Appointment, the Alaska Police Standards Council. We have Mr. Mark Mew online, the Chief Mew online.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself.
Hi, this is Mark Mew. I'm the chief at the Anchorage Police Department.
Very fine, sir. Appreciate you applying for this county. Would you please give us some of your background and tell us why you'd like to be on the council?
Certainly. Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to you this morning. As I said, my name is Mark Mew. I am the current chief here at the APD. As way of background, I guess I can tell you that I started in law enforcement in 1980 at the Lane County Sheriff's Office in Eugene, Oregon. That was a corrections job. I became a patrol officer in Anchorage here at APD in 1983. Worked pretty much everywhere in this department and up through the ranks, eventually retiring in 2003 as deputy chief of police. At that point in time, I went to the Anchorage School District. They opened up a new department. I was the director there, Department of Security and Emergency Preparedness. We worked on school safety issues and sheltering issues and incident command system and those sorts of things. Radio and CCTV was a big part of what I did there. I was asked to come back as chief in January of 2010, so I've been here a little over 3 years. Along the way, I attended the, as a lieutenant, the FBI's National Academy in Quantico, Virginia. That's a three-month course in managing police departments, I guess you would say. And in 2011, I finished up the National Executive Institute, which is sort of a similar course put on by the Department of Justice for mid and large-sized police departments. So that's sort of my background here. Married, have two kids, so both of them grown, all of them raised here in Eagle River, and I've been a part of this community for, I guess, about 30 years and have been always involved in issues of public safety since I came here in 83, or 82, actually. I'm interested in this job. One, I have been fortunate enough to have been asked to fill the last half of a vacant position on the council, so I've been on the council since 2010. We and the troopers are the two largest groups or law enforcement agencies in the state. The troopers are represented on the council as well. We both have a vested interest in what the council does, which is set standards for hiring. They train folks and set the training standards, and sadly, a lot of their work is decertifying folks that that aren't meeting those standards. My experience is that APD and the troopers are probably the groups that hire, train, and release when it's necessary the highest number of law enforcement people in the state of Alaska. And I think both of us have a high need to see that the standards are appropriately set and that they're adhered to. Of course, as a member of the council, I have to recuse myself from cases that I generate here, but I am able to monitor cases elsewhere, and I think it's to the advantage of both the state and of the APD that we're able to help the state set standards in the cases from smaller departments and other agencies that I have nothing to do with, because those same standards will come back and apply to the APD in cases where I'm not voting. You know, we are coming off of the Rollins tragedy and the the black eye that we got over the Rafael Espinoza case. Both of those cases are good examples of why we need rigid standards and why our industry needs the ability to hold the technical ability in terms of polygraphs and training and so forth, as well as the leadership necessary to enforce those standards. We need the high standards. We need the ability to enforce them. Otherwise, we erode the public trust. And I'm very interested in being able to do my part to uphold those standards. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I thank you very much. And I neglected to say that Representative Hughes has previously excused, so that's why she's not here today, previously excused. And Chief, approximately how many cases throughout the state does the council handle a year?
In terms of
disciplinary
decertification issues,
yes.
They meet twice a year, and I would say that at each of those cases, we probably look at a dozen officers who are being decertified. Now, I wouldn't say that necessarily means there's 24 a year, because some of them we see twice. They may be in an early stage of decertification and later, but I would say somewhere between a dozen and two dozen a year, off the top of my head, are officers who have either been fired or who have left in lieu of termination, and the council is making some decision about whether their conduct is such that they should be decertified. What we don't want to see is an officer show up at a department, do poor work, get fired, and then be passed around to other departments in the state. It's very important that if the conduct warrants it, that the certificate is pulled, that is recorded, and any other agency in the country who wishes to consider that officer gets to know that there was something there that was significant.
I'm glad to hear that other agency groups could profit by the same example. how many police troopers, various types of officers over which you guys watch, approximately how many are they throughout throughout the state? So I'm trying to figure out what's the percentage of those that you have to decertify among all the officers throughout the state of Alaska?
Well,
not an exact number.
I have roughly 370 officers right now here at the APD, and we might decertify two or three a year, I would say. So what is that, maybe 1% of them? It's hard for me to do math while I'm talking, but and my sense is, Representative, that we probably are more aggressive at the APD and its troopers than they might be in other departments. But I wouldn't think the number is more than 1 or 2%.
All right, thank you very much. Let's go to the committee. Any questions for the chief? No questions for the chief. Here's your opportunity. Well, with that, sir, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk with us this morning. We'll see what the committee decides to do here, and we don't decide here. The confirmation is before a joint session of the legislature. We would merely pass on your name if that's the desire of the committee, and I thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and if anybody has any questions for me, feel free to get in touch with me. I'll be happy to respond.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your service, sir.
It's my pleasure. You want me to just sign off now?
If you'd like. Any questions from the committee? If not, I'd like a motion to forward the name to the full legislature.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we move Mark Mew's name to the full body for consideration for Alaska Police Standards Council appointee.
Very good. And this does not affect how any of us might vote when you go to the joint session on this or any other nomination. So it will be forwarded. Let's take it quick at ease while we do the paperwork. Okay. House State Affairs Committee will please come back to order. We're now going to consider House Bill 113 for an act entitled An Act Relating to the Membership of the Alaska Fire Standards Council. To hear to present the bill, would you please introduce yourself, sir?
For the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige. Representative Feige apologizes for not being here today. He is en route to Energy Council, and he had meetings scheduled prior to the council. For purposes of disclosure, I am a assistant chief in a fire department, and Representative Feige is a chief in a fire department, and as a result, could have some interaction with the Fire Standards Council. So just want to make sure that there's no misunderstanding there. The Fire Standard Council, as stated in their mission, is to establish professional standards for fire service personnel and curriculum requirements for the certification of training programs. They do that through an 11-member council, and the council currently consists of two chief administrative officers from fire departments of local government, four representatives of firefighters, including one from the Alaska Firefighters Association, two volunteer firefighters, one from a large community and one from a small community, two members of the public, again, one from a large community and one from a small community, and then a representative of the state fire marshal's office. House Bill 113 will specify that one of the four firefighters will be a representative of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. The APFA represents approximately 500 career firefighters in Alaska and is affiliated with the International Association of Firefighters. It will also add an additional member to the council. That additional member will represent the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. The Fire Chiefs Association is, again, a membership organization representing fire chiefs within Alaska. The purpose of the bill is to ensure that the three statewide organizations that represent the majority of firefighters in the state had an opportunity to be represented in their official capacity on the council. As mentioned, currently one of the organizations is currently represented, but the other two are not. So that was a desire of the council to expand its membership by one member to allow for the additional representation. I did provide you with some information on the council, as well as the current membership and a list of some of the certification programs that they oversee. I'll be happy to go into any detail with that you would like. And also there online is someone from the council that will be happy to answer any questions in that area. Looking specifically at the bill, there was a slight change in the wording beginning in Section 1, be on page 1, line 5, because the current standards call for the two fire chiefs and thus the addition of the third fire chief to be from a municipal fire department, and we felt like that excluded certain fire chiefs because in some cases, for example, in many of our boroughs, the fire chief is actually a representative of a private nonprofit organization under contract with the borough. So we wanted to clarify that so there wasn't any issues there.
I've had a change from the bill this year or in the version. I think you had essentially the same bill last year. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the bill last year by Representative Johnson's office did not include that provision. That was a provision I caught in the process, and the Fire Standards Council as well as the organizations did look at that and all agreed that that was an appropriate change to make.
Thank you.
And then, again, as I already stated, membership composition is slightly altered for the Firefighters Association because the original wording said firefighter administrative officer from that organization. The organization would like to be able to recommend to the governor an appointment of any of their membership that they choose to represent them at the Fire Standards Council. And also it adds a member, as I already stated, the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. And then finally on page 2, it adds a member of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. Section 2 of the bill adds a new subsection defining how these members are appointed, and that is the governor appoints from a list of three individuals submitted by each of those organizations. So the governor is still making the appointment, but the membership organizations are making a recommendation to the governor on the who to appoint out of their membership. And the importance of having these groups is it lets them speak for the group. So if you were to look at myself as an example, if I'm a member, if I'm there representing myself as an assistant fire chief, then I'm representing myself and the assistant fire chief, whereas if I'm appointed by the Fire Chiefs Association, then I am representing the Fire Chiefs Association and the opinion of that body as a whole. So it gives a broader depth of representation on the committee. And with there, I'll be happy to entertain any questions. We do have a representative from each of the three organizations on the phone in support of the bill, so we can go to them, as well as the Fire Standards Council for questions.
Okay, any questions at this point? Okay, again, thank you. Please stick around. We have one person in the audience and some people on the line. I'm going to call those online first as a courtesy. we have Jeff Tucker from North Pole.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Tucker. I'm the fire chief for the North Star Volunteer Fire Department. I'm here representing the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. We support House Bill 113 as a good bill that includes the representation now of, that would include a representation of all three of the major fire service organizations in the state of Alaska. Again, as Mr. Pascal stated, you know, the purpose of this bill is to give a voice to those associations that represent membership from across the state. And the Fire Chiefs Association has over 100 member fire chiefs from across the state of Alaska, and having a single voice on that on this body that's very important to the way we conduct business in the state of Alaska is important to our association. So we are supportive of this bill, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Yeah. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, it's good to hear from you, and I appreciate the fact that you've done your due diligence and have talked to us all about this. One of the questions, though, as I was looking through this, and I might need to talk to the sponsor as well, so whomever can answer the question, it has to do with the fiscal note. How much is this going to cost the state additionally to have this increased representation for the firefighters? Or is this going to be absorbed by the associations?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, last time they did this bill, I believe they did a fiscal note for it, and it was a very minor fiscal note for the additional of that chair in the terms of a few hundred dollars. And my understanding, again, there's the chair of the Fire Standards Council, I believe, is also online. That is something that can be absorbed through the Fire Standards Council current funding.
Okay, follow up?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, sir, for calling in. Buddy Lane from North Pole, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Buddy Lane. I'm the chair of the Fire Standards Council.
Very good.
And the council has met, and we have discussed the bill, and we're in complete support of it. We've worked with these organizations in the past, and we feel that they bring something to the table for us, and we look forward to having them on the council. And as far as the fiscal note, I'd like to defer that over to, excuse me, Gordon Escutner, who I believe is online as well, that could answer that a little bit better.
Yes, he is online. Any questions for Buddy? Thank you, sir, for calling in.
Thank you.
North Pole is well represented. We have one here at the committee. North Pole, and you two guys from North Pole, so you're in the news today, huh?
Just for full disclosure.
Yeah, for full disclosure.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thank you, sir. Is Robert Denard, am I pronouncing that correctly? Are you online, sir?
Yes, sir. Robert Denard, representing the Alaska State Firefighters. We represent about 1,500 firefighters throughout the state of Alaska, and we are in support of the change to this bill as well. I also sit on the Alaska State Fire Standards Council seat.
Okay. Any questions? You did well. Did you have no questions? Thank you, sir. Is Gordon Desider online, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. This is Gordon DeSkettner. I'm the Executive Director for the Fire Standards Council, and I oversee all the administrative functions of the council.
Please give your mark, sir, and I think there's a question you might be able to answer. I think it's regarding the fiscal note.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. There is a fiscal note associated with this. It's simply to address the travel costs associated with the additional seat that would be represented by the fire chiefs. At this point in time, we have seen a significant increase in our cost of travel. We did want to identify that as being a minor impact of the addition of this seat. That total fiscal note that's been identified is approximately $2,300.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. And thank you, Gordon, for being here. So just as a follow-up, Chief Tucker was thinking that perhaps that was going to be borne by the association, or is this going to be an increase in funding to you?
Well, in the discussions that I've had, it wouldn't be appropriate to hold one entity accountable for their own travel costs for council meetings when we are responsible for all other council members. So we have included this as an additional fiscal note. So that $2,300 annual is the additional travel cost we anticipate that this seat will require funding for.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? We want to thank you and all the gentlemen who called in online. We have an audience, I believe, Tom Westcott. Are you here, sir? Morning.
Morning. My name is Tom Westcott. I'm president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters, and we represent seven locals from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 113. Pleased that we've worked with the fire chiefs and the council to gain their unanimous endorsement of this bill, and our overall goal is just to enhance the Fire Standards Council.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Not, I'd like to thank you for your service to the committee and to the state.
Thank you.
Is anybody else online who'd like to testify? Anybody out in the audience who'd like to testify? If not, we'll close public testimony, bring it to the committee. Any committee discussion on this?
Do I
don't everybody to speak at one time. Representative Isaacson.
Do I have to excuse myself since two of the...
The chair rules that you must vote.
Okay, good.
Good.
Okay. Is there a motion from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would move HB 113 version 0442 uniform with individual recommendations and attached attached fiscal note. I'm sorry, there isn't zero.
Fine. Any objection? If not, Bill Patterson from the committee, and thank you all the folks who testified and called in. Get out there and protect us from fire. Off record while we do the paperwork.
Thing about what we've been talking about throughout the last 46 or so days is the abundance of federal overreach in every aspect of our lives here in Alaska, whether it comes to resource development, health care, education, anything you can think of that the federal government believes that they know better than Alaskans. To me, it's a little bit of hypocrisy. We've been dealing with the legacy well issues up in the NPRA. We've been dealing with the 11 million acres of NPR taken off the table for possible development. We continue to deal with the inaction of opening up Area 1002 in Anwar. We've talked about some of the things that are happening on the Yukon River. We have multiple interactions, and not positive ones, with the federal government. So the idea of House Concurrent Resolution 3 is to form a committee of legislators, and you can look at the makeup of the legislators. It's a pretty balanced committee. And what we would like to do is look at things that affect Alaskans and our ability to prosper as a state, to make our own decisions. Gun rights is something that's been at the forefront with the Obama administration sending out 23 executive actions or orders or recommendations that doesn't fit into Alaska's lifestyle or our heritage. These are just a few examples of things that have been happening, the EPA with not issuing air permits, the problems that we've had getting Shell up to the OCS to drill, problems getting permits to put a bridge across the Colville River in CD5. I mean, these are ongoing. I feel like Alaska is completely under attack by the federal government, where we're supposed to be a cohesive part of the United States. I feel like we're always on the defense. And so this committee's job would be to establish what the most important things are to Alaska, where the federal government has reached in and made decisions based on an attitude from an east, and you know, I hate to put the East Coast against the West Coast, but that's what it feels like. It feels like because the East Coast has been, you know, overbuilt and paved and there's no parks, that the federal government actually feels like Alaska should be their own national park and playground, which it goes against everything that we agreed to when we became a state and part of the union. We don't want to, we don't want to start the talk of succession, which I heard on the floor from one of my colleagues by talking about how the federal government does its overreach. You know, federal encroachment is here on every level, but you know, we're not talking about succeeding. But what we are talking about is having a level playing field and having our voices heard. So this committee is designed to not only inform the legislature on things that we really need to take and stay on top of, but work with the our AG's office. And I think that that's where Representative Keller and I can have some really symbiotic relationships with what this committee could do and what he's doing with CAFTA, and make sure that we're united when we talk to people in the federal government about Alaska's issues. It would require this committee to come up with a report. Get the date here. It gives us a year to work by January 15th of 2014. We'll come up with some recommendations and some action items that we could take as a legislature to really push back on the federal government. I know there's many efforts going on. I'm part of a group called the Energy Producers State Coalition, which we're doing the same thing on the on a statewide level with the western states, talking about Endangered Species Act, about land use, about land permitting. And so I believe that it's time for us. You heard Senator Murkowski talk about it. You heard Senator Begich talk about it. I think on a daily basis we talk about the lack of involvement that Alaska has when decisions from Washington, D.C. come down. I use No Child Left Behind as a prime example of a federal overreach into Alaska that just did not fit Alaska. We have National Oceans Policy coming down the pike, which is not going through Congress. It's actually going through a backdoor regulatory process through the Appropriations Committee that will zone our oceans, and the federal government will basically be able to tell us we can't build a dock, we can't fish in certain areas. It's so large, the National Oceans Policy movement, that it's hard to keep up with on a daily basis. There's 23 agencies involved. The secretaries of many departments in D.C. are involved in this, and it is not good for Alaska. We do not have a voice in that, the design of that program, and it's like that on a regular basis. So I believe that getting both the House and the Senate together to have some frank discussions about what we can do to stop federal overreach and what we can do as a united group and being on the same page, I think, is very important. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would I'm happy to hold the bill. I'm happy to work with Representative Keller, because we do have the same mindset when it comes to the federal government. But I'd like to see us have an opportunity this interim to dig deep and come up with some solid recommendations that we could work on next session.
Next session.
Well, the report will come out in January of 2014, and hopefully part of those recommendations would be to the governor's office, to the AG, and also to spark some other legislation, much like HB 69, that nullification bill, I guess that we're calling it now. But there's just opportunities that we're busy, we have busy lives, we're busy outside of, and not everybody understands. Not everybody's a healthcare expert, not everybody's an education expert, not everybody's a resource development expert, but this committee would be charged with looking at every single action that the federal government does that is mandated on the state and come up with recommendations on either how to communicate and work and bridge, have a bridge with the federal government, or to, suggest legislation that would stop them from doing that.
Thank you very much. I think this bill has some real potential. Any comments from the committee? Representative Keller.
If you'll indulge me, I would like to make some rather lengthy comments. The sponsor has hit dead on to an incredibly critical need that we have, and that is to have a central focus point in our state government, wherever it be, that focuses on federal issues. And this is not a new thing for the state of Alaska. I believe it was under Hickel. There used to be in the Department of Law a division that dealt with this, and then it went by the wayside. One thing, in my work in CACFA, and I gave you the committee all a packet, and I want to go through it real quickly in a minute here, but just to tell you what it is, not the... But my work with CACFA has really...
For the benefit of our vast viewing audience, would you define that, please?
Like a packet, you mean, or what?
CACFA.
Oh, Citizens Advisory. The Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. I forget.
Yeah. I may introduce legislation to ban
acronyms.
It'll be an amendment. Please continue.
That is a real hazard for us down here. One thing that has really come clear to me in my thinking is that we need to work very closely with several of the agencies, one of them being the Department of Law, and the other one being DNR. In the Department of Law, we have an attorney that works nothing, just exclusively on RS 2477 rights, and I won't get into defining it because I think you all know what it is. Great guy, really, really competent attorney. We've had two AGs in a row here that are really with us. John Burns, who is now gone, and now Michael Garrity, are very supportive in helping us work this together. In DNR, we have the... ANILCA team, they call it, and it's a team of administrative folks that keep an eye on the things as they relate to ANILCA that are referenced in Representative Millett's bill. For example, the No More Clause, they monitor that. And there's a PAD unit, which is working on the navigability of waters, and then there's CACFA, is also housed within DNR. We have the director of CACFA is in the office, DNR, in Fairbanks, and has several staff. The problem is that there's such a huge volume of materials. It's just staggering. We figured out last year that our CEO, Stan Leapart, worked through 14,000 pages of various Federal Register compendiums, plan drafts, this kind of thing. And he works, and he and his staff work full-time at trying to, and as does ANILCA, trying to precipitate out the areas of federal overreach that they find. And it's huge, and so CACFA is overworked, and I think that if we can get efficient and put another clarify the focal point like the sponsor says, I think we can get a lot more efficient work done. The real problem, of course, is the jurisdiction. What can you do when the federal overreaches? We can't write a law, to outlaw the things they do, because of the supremacy clause. So where that goes practically is that one of the only options we have is the courts, and so litigation is a huge part of this. And that's one of the things CACFA does is make recommendations to the department, to the AG's office, on different lawsuits, and they are supportive of in the briefs and all that are getting developed. That's the source of the information is in there. CACFA, just so you know, what we do is we not only sort through these things, but we always look for opportunities for public comment. And often we find, I don't know if you have read the Federal Register, but it's pretty dry reading, and it takes a pretty talented person to be able to read through it. But anyway, they'll have time limits on public comment, and often they're really too short. And not only are they too short, but the public comment isn't recruited from the broad spectrum of the state. You know, it's here and there, and sometimes the people that are, that comment reflect a particular view that probably does not reflect the total Alaska. I was just, this packet, and I also gave one to Representative Millett in the order, just to give you an idea of the challenge of the work. That first thing is nothing more than a letter that came out giving a link to all the different compendiums just for the U.S. Park Service. And a compendium is the superintendents of these parks make the rules, for the parks, U.S. parks in the state of Alaska. And they unwittingly, it isn't that they're evil people, but they unwittingly often will overstep their bounds and get into areas where they limit our access to our natural resources and what have you. Second thing on there is, just for your interest, is CACFA's annual report of this last year. I believe it may be not draft now. It'd be just a couple days into this. But if you go on to the website, Citizens Advisory Commission of Federal Areas, you'll see a archive of past annual reports. And if you'll read through it, it'll just real quickly, it'll give you an idea of the scope of the task and the problem. Then there's also in the packet is a newsletter that the Alaska Lands Update that comes out regularly. You can go on the site and you can file for getting it yourself if you want. The next one is really interesting because I think it's one of the premier examples of what is being done within the administration that we don't get full advantage of in the legislature, and we need to have a better link. But it's a opening summary judgment brief on the Sturgeon case, and I'm not going to get into the Sturgeon case, but if you read through it, you will find that it really gives a good description of ANILCA and the challenge that we have in that area. So anyway, like I said, I warned you that it was going to be extensive, but I really, I didn't want to leave the impression that I am at all negative on the bill, and I just am excited because we see the scope of the problem is huge, as does the sponsor. So therefore, we have recently been working both sides of the legislature and with the governor's office to try to get some consensus on exactly what the best central focus point is. And at this point, that's unclear. So your help would be welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to leave my staff here. I have a competing Labor and Commerce Committee that I'm on, and there's a bill over there that I'm on with, and that we're getting
very fine. I want to thank you for bringing this bill to us, and we will hear some other folks today testify on it, and we're looking forward to having our next full session on it.
Okay, and then Ike is here to take.
Yes, would you
take
come
questions.
Up, sir? Online, we have John Lewis. Mr. Lewis, would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, good morning. For the record, my name is John Lewis. I am a project management consultant with approximately 39 years of experience working in the industry. I'm also on the board of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance, and I am testifying today in support of House Concurrent Resolution Number 3, monitoring the federal government to stop or slow down their overreach into the state of Alaska. This has become a critical component of the resource development in our state. In my opinion, federal overreach impacts us in many ways, but for those of us working in the resource industry, specifically in my case as a consultant, it means project delay or denial in support of the industry. Such delay or denial has a significant impact on jobs. A recent study statewide of Alaskans indicated that the majority of Alaskans see jobs and the economy as the most important issues facing Alaska today. And when the federal government imposes critical habitat designations via the Endangered Species Act or imposes Arctic drilling moratoriums, they are hurting our economy and reducing our jobs. When their actions result in lengthy delays in permitting for projects like CD5 or Point Thompson permitting in the Tanana Basin, bridge delays, then they're hurting our economy and reducing jobs. An economic profile at the support industry shows that our companies pay $2 billion in annual wages in the state of Alaska and employ more than 10% of Alaska's total workforce. When the federal government uses executive orders to take action against Alaska without any congressional or public review, they are limiting our ability to employ Alaskans and continue to put billions of dollars into Alaska's economy via the wages. HC3 establishing a joint committee on federal overreach is a good first step in addressing this issue. The oil and gas and mining support industry, and I personally look forward to assisting the committee in regulating and restraining the federal government. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for phoning in. Any questions or comments from the committee? Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, John, for being here. And I do support this resolution. But in your mind, how effective can it be with the depth of information and the fire hose of regulations, as it were, being promulgated? How effective do you think this committee is going to be in achieving the aims of the Alaska Support Alliance and intent of this resolution?
The effectiveness of the committee will be as effective as the committee is. The alternative is not to do anything and just sit back and let this happen, which, in my opinion, wouldn't be a wise route to take. I think Representative Miller and Keller are on the right track, and I think, in my mind, I would support, and the Alaska Industry Alliance would also support, the formation of this committee, at least to try and stem the fire hose, as you put it.
Follow up. So I take from your comments, and I don't know if you're speaking for the alliance itself, but is this something then that you will help feed the committee with information, maybe help, as Representative Keller said, state agencies are just inundated and maxed out in being able to weed through this. Do you see the alliance or other cooperative type agencies, nonprofits, industry support, as being allies in helping to digest this information and summarize and point the direction that the committee needs to look at and possible bills or resolutions that need to be generated? Does that make
sense? Absolutely. I think that's exactly the role of the alliance, to assist the state legislature in helping the industry and helping ourselves keep the business going.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify just to make sure we were all on the same page, and I definitely appreciate that voice of support for this.
Yes, if this committee is to come into being, we're going to need help in the legislature. We only have 90 days down here, and of course there are other issues also that we address, so we're going to need all the help we can get from all parties possible on this big issue. Any other questions? Mr. Lewis. Thank you, sir, again. John Matthews, are you there? Mr. Matthews?
Yes, I'm sorry. This is Joe Matthews. Good morning, Chair Lynn and committee members. My name is Joe Matthews. I'm the founding president of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance and currently an emeritus board member. I'm also vice president of external affairs for Nana Development Corporation. Nana Development Corporation is the business arm of Nana Regional, owned by 12,500 Inupiat people who originated in Northwest Alaska. Nana exists to improve the quality of life for our people, in part by maximizing economic growth and protecting and enhancing our lands. Resource development is the underpinning of Nana's operations in Alaska, from our ownership of the Red Dog Mine to our subsidiaries that provide engineering, construction, and a wide range of support services to the oil and gas industry. Like many businesses that operate in Alaska, We have struggled to develop our resources economically given the outsized impact of the federal government. Some of these impacts include the sheer size of the federal government's land holdings in Alaska give us fewer opportunities to create economic value through resource development, real estate, or by other means. Our region is hemmed in on all sides by federal parks, preserves, and monuments, which hampers access to our lands and resources. The National Environmental Constituency that feels that they own these set-aside lands brings frivolous lawsuits, negative publicity, and misplaced activism that hinders development. The layers upon layers of required federal permits and the slow pace of federal permitting can delay economic projects for years, in many cases, make commercially viable projects uneconomic. Authors Myers and Kent have coined the term environmental or conservation refugees. And that definition is as persons who no longer gain a secure livelihood in their traditional homelands because of what are primarily environmental factors of unusual scope. In the context of that definition, in my opinion, I would propose that the federal government has created environmental factors of unusual scope through its agencies. In short, federal overreach is creating environmental refugees in rural Alaska and Native communities. People in the Nana region have become conservation refugees because access to Nana lands for resource development is restrained by the federal ownership of the majority of land that surrounds Nana lands, which have been designated as national parks and monuments. One would have to seriously question that if we tried to build the Red Dog Mine today, whether or not it would happen in a time period that would be attractive to investors. A more recent example of federal overreach is the denial by Secretary Salazar to grant permission for the residents of King Cove, Alaska, to build a road through federal land, thereby preventing them from the easy access to a year-round airport. The federal government has made residents of King Cove environmental or conservation refugees. We need to be ever vigilant of the federal encroachment and barriers to access to our land. The state of Alaska has the right to review and voice concerns that create Alaska refugees in their own land. I urge the support and passage of HCR 3. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, and I'd point out that on the King Cove matter, this is also a matter of public safety, getting people to medical care that might save their lives. So it goes even beyond economics. It goes to public safety. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Joe, for calling in. Appreciate it. Any questions? Okay. Thank you again. Reed Christensen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. Good morning, sir. Please give your name and affiliation and let us have the wisdom of your thoughts.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Reed Christensen. I work for Dallenbach Corporation, a local manufacturing company specializing in oil field instrumentation systems. I've been with them for 18 years. I'm also a board member of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance and currently serve as treasurer of the Alliance. I'm testifying today on behalf of the Alliance in support of House Concurrent Resolution Number 3 to establish a joint committee on federal overreach. You know, the Alliance has membership from all parts of the state, as my two previous fellow Alliance members have testified. Our membership crosses multiple sectors of our economy beyond the core resource extraction industry. Other industries in which our member companies employ Alaskans include construction, transportation, finance, insurance, real estate, education, health services, and leisure and hospitality. The combined wages of these member companies is over $1.99 billion per year. We support all six approaches to help address federal overreach as outlined by Department of Natural Resource Commissioner Dan Sullivan in his testimony before the State Senate Affairs Committee given just this past January of this year. The first item on its list of approaches was to monitor activities, decisions, and litigation strategies that could infringe upon state sovereignty and the rights of our citizens to create their own economic future. The third item on his list was to build alliances with other government entities to advocate for shared rights and interests. Establishing this joint committee can go far in helping to support both of these approaches, the monitoring and the alliance building. The federal overreach harms our membership in two lethal ways: delays and preemptive cancellation of potential projects. You know, the president and his administration keep saying they are for an all-of-the-above energy policy, but their actions do not support these claims. I have a hard time believing that the proponents of delays, such as the permits for ConocoPhillips, CD5 development, or the drilling moratorium that supposedly did not apply to Alaska, that they don't realize the tremendous economic impact of such action. The critical habitat designation for the polar bear and the preemptive mining impact study by the EPA before a development plan has even been submitted are examples of the latter strategy of preemptively creating serious concerns for possible future projects. Both strategies are in direct opposition to the Alaska Statehood Act, in which the state of Alaska was promised to be able to develop our natural resources for our economic benefit. It's quite ironic that a federal government, which continues to spend money it does not have and continues to produce wave after wave of regulations that even they cannot keep up with, feels the need to reach all the way up to Alaska and meddle in our affairs. There may be some truth in the Representative Don Young's statement that Washington, D.C. would like the state of Alaska to become a national park for the rest of the country to come visit while they're on vacation. We do not share this view and consider the creation of a joint committee a small step in the right direction to combat this unprecedented and unacceptable federal overreach. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and please let us know how the Alliance can help.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you again, sir, for your testimony. Did anybody, Representative Kreis Tompkins.
Thank you. I was curious if you thought it would be helpful, or from your perspective, if there'd be any advantage for there to be non-legislative members of this committee, members from industry or from the legal community.
Would you repeat that, please? I
was curious if from an industry perspective it'd be helpful to have representatives from industry or the legal community or someone who's not in the legislature, basically, to be on the committee.
Do you have a response to that, sir?
Yes. Representative Craig Puppis, through the chair, I think one advantage we might be able to add would be to help provide insight onto upcoming projects and things that have maybe not have reached the legislative level yet. One of the areas that we're concerned about is the Alliance, or on behalf of our membership, for keeping the project, the potential project, on track and moving forward. As we're aware, you know, development of our natural resources takes a lot of time. And so I would think one advantage having some industry representation on the committee might be to help keep on the forefront of projects that are on the horizon that we are concerned are getting derailed or delayed before they even get off the ground.
Thank you. Any other questions? I want to thank you, sir, for testifying. Any other anybody else online would like to testify? Anybody else in the room would like to testify? Would you like to make any comments, closing comments?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ike Gilopsos. I'm an aide in the Office of Representative Millett. And the only comments that I feel would be appropriate would be in response to the laudable question that Representative Isaacson asked, which was, how can one committee deal with the deluge of the enormity of all of the types of regulations, the questions, whether or not the threshold of trying to react and push back is warranted, or whether, quite frankly, the purview of the federal government is warranted in that case, to which the representative had tried to say, but unfortunately, because of time constraints, had to run out. One of the biggest reasons for trying to compose a committee with a very specific focus is in recognition of the fact that because a session only has 90 days, and because committees by their nature have to be at the nexus of various departments, various divisions, time really is of an essence. This committee, for example, had two hearings on federal overreach with the Senate version, but you also have had to deal with matters as far-ranging across the spectrum of the regulations, the division of motor vehicles, to permitting of water rights, to elections. And that is very difficult when you are trying to corral and trying to marshal the various representatives within the agencies and the departments. If there is not a mission statement or a guiding principle of a particular committee that allows that to be focused, and the impetus for this committee, quite frankly, is to triage these priorities. In other words, we all hear the buzzwords of federal overreach. We all know that it is a topic of much dispute, of much heated conversation. But in reality, when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, a committee being able to interrogate those either complaints or issues that have been arisen either from industry, as Representative Christ Tompkins mentioned, or from members of the community in trying to understand the relationship of various stakeholders in that relationship. Having committee members who have a focus on that committee allow there to be the ability to cut away the chafe and talk about issues that are most pressing. So if King Cove could have had the attention of a committee for a concerted effort, would the congressional delegation have had more pressure brought to bear, as well as the Department of the Interior, because there would have been constant hearings from one committee? It's an interesting exercise to say that words do matter, and the ability of a committee to try to bring its weight does matter. So I know brevity is a virtue, and I'm not a virtuous man with that. I'll close my remarks, but that's what I believe it is.
Thank you very much. Your points are well taken. This and other committees, as we know, we cover a variety of issues, just the issues that come before this committee alone. Yeah. And while we are very concerned about this particular piece of pending legislation, we have other matters too. So to have one committee as a focal point, where this is what they do, I think it might be very helpful to the process. Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering why the sunset 2015. I don't mean to be a pessimist, but I don't see our problems going away that quickly. And I just was wondering about what the sponsor was thinking when she put that in there.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, the reason why Representative Millett put a sunset clause in there was to give deference to future legislatures. If it would be, to excuse the pun, an overreach to enact a committee that would not have the ability of future legislatures to determine its own sunset. And this gives the ability of future legislatures to not only have a sunset, but to amend it, perhaps to sharpen its focus, perhaps to modify it. Perhaps, as Representative Christ Tompkins had voiced, there is a potential for it to go from being solely a committee of legislators to it being a forum by which members of the community can voice themselves. This is an ability for it to be an initial step, as the members of the testifying list have spoken about today, to allow us to try out an issue that at the same time requires us action at this moment.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for him? Thank you. We're going to hold this bill to try to get some positive input into it. I think it has outstanding potential. Of course, the bottom line is that Alaska is a sovereign state. We're not a colony of the federal government for them to do anything they would like to do, and their non-infinite wisdom. Any other comments on this particular bill? Thank you very much, and I want to thank you and the sponsor for bringing this to us. With that, we're going to close public testimony. We may open it again at our next hearing, and we will hear this bill as soon as we possibly can to get it on its journey. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, with that, is any other business to come before the committee? Our next meeting, the State Affairs Committee, will be a week from today, and there will be no meeting on Thursday. So with that, I thank you everybody for coming in, and we are adjourned. Thanks.